Just got a job, and I wouldn't miss this for anything. Ooh, can I have that? Wow. That's awesome. Toshiba.
Are you looking to buy one?
No, but I'll do lewd and lascivious things if you'll give me one. All right, we'll start in a second. I have a brief. I like to show pictures.
I'll be introducing you as well.
Okay. Oh, he's going to introduce me.
Yeah, whatever. You're kind of introducing
me. Well, introduce me then while we get the brief up.
Bob probably kind of introduced himself, but I don't know. How many people here were at the very first Hope Conference? Anybody?
Holy shit.
All right, this guy was. Who else? You may remember that 18 years ago, almost to the day, in this very spot, Robert Steele opened the very first Hope Conference to great fanfare and strobe lights, and it was dramatic. And he has kept that tradition going for every single Hope Conference. Well, not starting it out, but he has shared his knowledge in these marathon sessions, some of which have run all night long, like everything you wanted to know about spying, but were afraid to ask, that kind of thing. Will you be doing that again this time, Robert?
2 hours limit.
2 hours, when would that be?
Midnight on Saturday.
Saturday midnight, obviously, in this room, I believe. Well, you'll find it. Just come up here looking for him. It's just an amazing Q&A. This guy knows a lot about the intelligence community and sources and methods and all of these things. He worked in a capacity serving the CIA for some years, and he knows what he's talking about. So this is one of your opportunities Saturday night to actually talk with somebody who actually worked in spy-related activities. So he's going to be talking today for the next hour. And what's the title of your talk, Robert?
The Two-Party Tyranny and Open Source Everything. The battle for the soul of the republic.
All right, it's important. We're at a crossroads here. So I want to introduce Robert Steele, a real Hope veteran, and I promise he will not disappoint.
Bear with us a second. We're just getting the slides up.
That's right. In the early days, they were running 2 hours late. So this is an improvement. And we're now obviously on the third generation of hackers.
Advance and reverse.
Okay. What evolved a few years ago was that I would give one serious talk. Are we taping this, by the way? Video?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. About 2 years ago, I started giving one serious talk, and then in the evenings, usually at midnight on Saturday, I do spy improv. But it's really not about spying. It's about the 1,800 books I've reviewed at Amazon in 98 categories. So I read a lot, and it continually pisses me off. So what I have here for you is a briefing, very quick briefing. I'm going to try and do it in 30 minutes. It might go over a little bit. We'll do some questions. But the bulk of the questions I hope I will answer on Saturday. Now, there's two tiny URLs, OSC-root, or hyphen root, whatever that's called, and EOR-hack. OSC-root is the homepage for open source everything. And the Twitter hash is #openall. The second hack is 26 jobs looking for someone with really, really high-tech smarts, and that's EOR-hack, and I tested it last night. Now, this is a logo that's evolving. I started out 20 years ago as the champion for open-source intelligence because I discovered when I stood up the Marine Corps Intelligence Command that 95% of what we needed to know about third world shitholes was not in the secret databases because the spies had been busy building technical collection against Russia, China, places like that. So I started the open source intelligence food fight in 1988, and I created the Golden Candle, which you see here in the middle. I then continued to evolve and realized that we have 8 intelligence tribes. And when I use the word intelligence, I'm really talking in the sense of decision support. We're spending $80 billion a year today on secret intelligence collection that General Tony Zinni from the U.S. Marine Corps has said provided him as commander of CENTCOM with, at best, 4% of what he needs to know, to which I would add nothing for everyone else, from agriculture to energy to health to veterans affairs. So there are actually 8 information tribes. And the challenge of the 21st century is going to be to get all 8 of those tribes to share all their information all the time. And so I published a book. Oh, this is just my little reminder. This is the battle for the Solar Republic part. Evil in the United States today is bracketed by Google on one side and the National Security Agency on the other. And I'm not a happy camper. Now, this is the plan. And I ran for president. I was accepted as a Reform Party candidate. I did it for 6 weeks, and I did it for 2 reasons. The first was to put on one website everything I had ever learned from a whole bunch of people about what a proper, honest president should look like. And I'll tell you the first thing. Nobody now running, including Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, is a proper president because they're all about them. Not a single person now running is about creating electoral reform, leveling the playing field, bringing the 6 small parties back in, and actually creating a coalition cabinet, a balanced budget, and so forth. All they want is their share of the two-party tyranny pie. All right? Now, do the math. If we could get, we have 300 million citizens, roughly, 200 million eligible voters, of whom half vote in any given year. If we could get 100 million voters to put $10 each, or 50 million to put $20 each, that's $1 billion. And if you combine that with our capacity to do social networking and influencing, and if Occupy would stop with its fingers up its ass, and actually occupy the home offices of our senators and representatives, we could turn this country around overnight. The only thing that can beat organized money is organized people, and we are the most disorganized bunch of sad sacks I've ever seen, which upsets me. So this was my my campaign logo with 4 pillars: electoral reform, a coalition cabinet, announced in advance. Anybody who cannot pick and announce a coalition cabinet in advance of Election Day is not qualified to be president of the United States of America. And they're either not qualified because they don't know how, or they're not qualified because they lack the integrity to do that. And I specifically accuse Barack Obama and Mitt Romney of lacking the integrity to lead America today. So this is what I did to test the two-party tyranny. I was accepted by the Reform Party, registered, created a website. It's still standing, bigbatusa.org. Launched several campaigns, YouTubes. I corresponded with every single presidential candidate other than Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, and I met half of them personally. I came up here to New York to brief Occupy and electoral reform, and that video made by someone else went viral. It's still up. I consulted with one of the leaders of the Tea Party. I've tried often with the independents, but Jackie Salit is not about playing well with others. And finally, the small parties. The small parties have a rich diversity of opinion that needs to be in this conversation, but they are so focused on their own conversation. I specifically include Ron Paul and the Libertarians and the Paulistas and all of these folks. They're actually not having a conversation with anybody. They're talking to themselves. So this is very frustrating. Now, this is the substance that is on the website. Balanced budget. No brainer. It is now documented that 50 cents out of every federal dollar, whether it's agriculture or energy or health or defense, 50 cents out of every dollar is waste. In defense, it's closer to 70%. 4% of the military force takes 80% of the casualties and gets 1% of the budget. The other 99% of the defense budget, in my judgment, is fraud, waste, and abuse. It's corporate vaporware. Take cyber command, and NSA is an example. I did a study. I published something in Homeland Security Today, America's Cyber Scam. At the time, there were exactly 67 people doing code-level research on cybersecurity. And of those, only 12 were doing defensive code-level research. Now, if you give each of those 67 people $1 million, then everything from the $67 million over here to the $15 billion over here that Keith Alexander is spending on Cyber Command is corporate vaporware. It's not real. Okay? So we have this massive, virtual, self-licking ice cream cone that keeps consuming dollars and is actually not doing anything to make America safer. And in fact, NSA was given the mission over a decade ago of securing U.S. business communications. And they chose not to do so because it was more important to them to be able to listen to U.S. businesses than it was to actually protect U.S. businesses. So your government is not doing its job. Electoral reform on the issues. We can have some discussions about preconditions of revolution. A lot of the preconditions of revolution exist today in the United States. Jobs, and then, of course, true cost economics. There's a guy in New York, Bob Siebert, I think. He likes to say, until you get the truth on the table, no matter how ugly it is, you can't deal with it. I like to say, the truth at any cost lowers all other costs. Now, I don't know how many of you actually believe the crap that Romney and Obama are putting out, but the actual unemployment rate in the United States of America is 22.4%. It's nowhere near 8%. And we are losing jobs every month. We are not creating jobs. But the two-party tyranny, it's convenient for Romney to not challenge Obama on substance. Because if you get down to the substance matter, if you get down to the substance of the matter, the greatest enemy of the United States of America today is the two-party tyranny, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. So we can talk about that. So my impressions. Obama is not a black man. He's a white man in search of a black identity. And when he appointed Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff, I knew immediately we were totally fucked. Okay? Because Rahm Emanuel represents Israel. He represents Darth Vader politics. He is the Newt Gingrich of the Democratic Party. Romney, there is an awful lot about Romney that has not been disclosed. And I personally would never consider Romney as a Republican candidate without first seriously investigating both his ties to Bain Capital and Israel and his ties to Mexican drug cartels and offshore money. I don't think Romney is qualified to be president. I don't think he'll be a good president. And I think that we have an opportunity, believe it or not, between now and the end of September to actually change this national conversation to none of the above. And there's nothing more I can do. Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, in their own little world, these guys are fighting for their share of the pie in their party. They have zero interest in actually creating a coalition cabinet. They both refused an invitation to co-sponsor an electoral reform summit that could have put the Electoral Reform Act on the table this summer. I like Rocky Anderson, but he's playing his own game. Gary Johnson, let him drive my MGB. Buddy Romer, one-trick pony. Taking the money out of politics means nothing if you don't also have ballot access, if you don't also have hand-counted ballots at the precinct level. Okay, all this campaign finance stuff, that's a red herring. That's a distraction. It's not serious. Buddy Romer is not serious, and neither is Gary Johnson. Jill Stein, lovely lady, deer in the headlights. Okay? I mean, she means well, and I will say this about the Green Party. It is the only party that actually has its shit together in terms of having really good ideas, well-documented, well-thought-out. My dream would be a coalition cabinet that starts with the Green Party platform and moves out into the Reform Party area. Cynthia McKinney has been obsessed with Libya and basically lost the year. And Virgil Good, Constitution Party, who? Okay. Now, this is what I've learned And I'll tell you something. If I were ever a professor, all my students would run for president. You learn a lot. You really do. You have the feeling in the fingertips. There are 8 validated national parties in the United States of America today. Constitution, Democratic, Green, Libertarian, Natural Law, Reform, Republican, and Socialist. Natural Law and Socialist are moribund right now. So, turns out that Congress has the power to mandate that all federal elections at the state levels include all 8 parties on the ballot. Congress can mandate that all debates for federal elections include candidates from all 8 parties, or 6 parties, whatever you want to do. Congress has been given this bill to pass 9 times, the last 4 by Ron Paul. And don't get me wrong, I like Ron Paul. I want him to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But he's not, he doesn't play well with others. So the fact of the matter is, we have a Congress that is thoroughly corrupt in every possible way. And don't blame Wall Street. It wasn't Wall Street that bribed Congress. It was Congress that shook down Wall Street for bribes. And as I ended my video that went viral because somebody else was kind enough to tape me, there's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by flushing this Congress down the toilet. Okay? It's that simple. Integrity is the only word that matters. Oh, I forgot this. Sorry. So I've addressed this, so I'll move forward. Now, we're in New York, Bloomberg's hometown, the largest secret armed force on the planet, outside of selected elements of the U.S. government. 75 million a year to put people in jail for marijuana so they can redline the districts and do a real estate thing. Three different things have come up with Bloomberg money, or friends of Bloomberg money. The first was independentvoting.org. And initially I had high hopes for them, but now I consider Jackie Salet to be part of the controlled opposition. They're basically frittering away all their capital on little nickel and dime things. And they're not focusing on the only thing that really matters, which is electoral reform. And I'll get to that in a second. And then you have No Labels. I helped laugh them out of existence twice now. They're coming back for a third time. And they've recently announced that in January, after the election, they're going to have a Republican and a Democrat lead them in a national conversation. So I sent the head of this thing a little email. I said, what part of 8 parties are you not understanding? Okay? No Labels is a fraud. I mean, it's like wag the dog or whatever. I mean, they even have their own goddamn song. It's a joke. It's a fraud. It's not serious. And it's not serious because it not only cannot embrace all of America, not just the two-party tyranny, it's not serious because it doesn't have an analytic model. It doesn't have any concept of what a balanced budget should look like that is actually pro-people, pro-patria. And it's basically money trying to pretend to be democratic. Similarly, Americans Elect. That was a really, really good idea, corruptly executed. Okay? Excellent idea. Absolutely brilliant, stunning idea. They made a complete hash of their website. Christine Wegman, or whatever her name is, like 7 or 8 times violated her signed oath to this organization and was promoting a particular candidate to be the Americans Elect candidate. Buddy Romer's given up on them. He's now a Reform Party candidate. Americans Elect is, in my view, an attempt for the moneyed class to plan for what comes after Obama self-destructs. And I don't think it's been very effective. So now the money's riding on Romney. Now, electoral reform is possible. I visited Capitol Hill, I think it was in December, November. They were terrified because Occupy represented an authentic groundswell. Think of the farmers marching on Washington, the whole populist thing. Occupy was authentic. Now Occupy has basically been distracted. They're competing for these little $10,000, $25,000 grants. They've been rolled by the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and so forth, in my opinion. Now, one of the cool things about sponsoring an Electoral Reform Act of 2012, which I developed with Jim Turner, who was number two for Ralph Nader, Jock Gill, who was one of President Clinton's communications assistants, and Michael Cudahy, who was one of Barry Goldwater's campaign senior campaign people, is it attracted all of the stakeholders across this country who have an interest in electoral reform. And that was really cool because it was a form of not crowdsourcing exactly, but it was a form of build it and they will come. And these are the 10 elements that emerged out of this national conversation among stakeholders. And what I'd like to see this become is a national conversation led by Occupy and the National Council for Deliberation and Dialogue. There is no integrity in our electoral process. The votes are counted by electronic form at a central level. They have nothing to do with what the actual votes were at the precinct level. Okay? So if you don't understand that, you shouldn't be in this room. Number two, ballot access. Ballot access in this country is as corrupt as any dictatorship on the planet. And I'm amazed that people just sit still for it. People vote, not states, put all initiatives to vote. We're now at a point where the National Ballot Initiative should be flying. We should be able to scrutinize all legislation. That's number 10, open legislation. No legislation should be passed that has not been placed before the public, so you can put 1,000 eyeballs on it. I mean, I love the Linux line, which is put enough eyeballs on it, no bug is invisible. Well, the other side of that is put enough eyeballs on it, no crime or corruption is invisible. Okay? Open debates at all levels, cabinet named in advance and participating in cabinet-level debates. At a minimum, the Attorney General, the Secretary of Defense, and I would, of course, delete the Department of Homeland Security, which, if I were president, Ron Paul would be given that job and then rewarded by being Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, which is my revenge for Citizens United. Here's the bottom line. We can still hold a National Electoral Reform Summit in September and demand the passage of the Electoral Reform Act of 2012. Problem is, I don't have the voice. No one hears me. We can still form a people's candidacy. I mean, for Christ's sake, if a game controller can get $2 million in 24 hours, why the hell can't saving the country get $1 billion in 24 hours? Okay? So I'm a little frustrated. We can still occupy the home offices of every senator and representative and force the issue of electoral reform in time for 2012. Every single one of these people is easily influenced if you are in their face in their home office. And this is the article. And by the way, I've posted this briefing at Phi Beta Iota, the public intelligence blog, so you can go get the briefing, and then these links are live. But this appeared in Reality Sandwich and kind of tells the story. Now, part two, and I can't see signs. How many minutes have I been speaking?
23.
Okay. Thanks. Battle for the Soul of the Republic. I finally realized, after I read something by Gary North, why Congress passes so many laws. That's how it blackmails business. In other words, we've become an administrative state so that corporations have to bribe Congress to escape the administrative regulations that Congress is threatening to impose. Okay? It's an attempt to micromanage everything, and it's actually totally dysfunctional. So integrity has been lost. Our government is hollow. And don't get me wrong. My wife still works for the U.S. government. I worked for the U.S. government for many years. I consider the U.S. government to be good people trapped in a bad system. And most of them are terrified that the U.S. government is going to collapse, that we're going to have a reduction in force, that they're going to be out on the street. There are no middle-class jobs anymore in America. Okay? The only jobs that are rising up are jobs that are in the server level at the $10 and below range. Congress is discounting the U.S. Treasury and borrowing $1 trillion a year, which started under Reagan, by the way, in 1980. They're doing all of this because they give out 95% of the Treasury in return for a 5% kickback. That's the standard rate on Capitol Hill, 5%. And even though there are those, like Ron Paul, who don't take these bribes, everyone has their own thing to hide. Ron Paul does not want you to know how wealthy he is. Now, this is a documented fact about waste. So I personally believe the time has come to abolish the existing government controlled by the two-party tyranny of treason. I firmly believe that the Republican and Democratic parties are the biggest enemies of the Founding Fathers' principles of the Republic, of the Constitution, of America the Beautiful. These two parties are the biggest problem we face. Not China, not Russia, not poverty, not terrorism, which is a joke, in fact, created by CIA, thank you very much. These are the two evils that actually undermine everything we might seek to do. Now, if I were governor, I'd be nullifying all federal regulations and kicking the federal government out of the state. Because essentially what we have is this circular fake money trail that bribes the states to go along with the federal government. I think every state needs to be building toward resilience from the county level on up. And I certainly recommend Kirkpatrick Sale's book, Human Scale, and John Robb's blog. So the bottom line here is we're not as stuck as we might think. America the Beautiful is rich beyond measure, but we're letting common crooks run this country. This is nuts. So here's the reference on this one, Reality Sandwich in April. And now for the last third part, quickly. I started out as a champion for open source intelligence. And my original schlick was, I'm a spy who says spying doesn't work. Don't send a spy where a schoolboy can go. Well, it turns out the reason the secret intelligence community doesn't want to hear what I'm saying is because there is enormous profit in secret waste. And because it's secret, they're not held accountable for this secret waste. Virtually every major program for NSA, CIA, the NRO, the National Geospatial Agency, which tends to be a little bit better, they're all failures. I mean, SAIC's Trailblazer for NSA, absolute failure. But the problem is, by the time people realize it's a failure, the government people responsible for the bad decisions have retired into a cushy second job, and the contractors have flipped. So it's like this constant churn. Your great book, Collective Intelligence, Creating a Prosperous World at Peace, edited by Mark Tovey. Burning Man, OpenBTS, provided free cell phone access to everybody at Burning Man using OpenBTS. And Range Networks is now starting to think about how they get OpenBTS out to the 5 billion poor with a cost of less than $2 a month for cellular service in the third world. And then I've written a book. Here it is. And I didn't bring any to sell. I hope you'll buy it. If you want to hack Amazon, it was in the top 100 for democracy the first 3 weeks it was out, and now it's nosedived. It's down in like 500,000. So at $10, it's a good buy. It's available in Kindle. And what I say here is what the world lacks right now, especially the United States, where every form of organization from government to banks to labor unions has betrayed the public trust, is integrity. Also lacking is public intelligence in the sense of decision support, knowing what one needs to know in order to make honest decisions for the good of all. We've become a stupid country. Not you guys. You're the exception. But we've become stupid and corrupt and lazy and fat. And I'm fat. I gave up drinking, but I cannot give up Haagen-Dazs. I have to draw the line someplace. This is, I credit this, someone else thought of this, and Michael Bowens from P2P Foundation, but this is the Open Everything Pyramid. It's not original to me. There's another guy that created it, and he's credited in the notes. This is my core vision. I believe that open source software, open spectrum, open hardware, open data access, open standards, open source intelligence, with open BTS and open money, I think that's where the seed crystal is, and it all leads towards resilience. Humans are root. On the left slide, you can see where technology is good, and then you can see where humans are good. And over here, a book that is still priceless, Radical Man, from the 1980s. Humanity is the wild card. The one inexhaustible resource we have is human ingenuity. But we spent the last 15 years trying to beat kids into submission, telling them to sit still for 18 years. It's nuts. I mean, those of us who survived the U.S. educational system are the exception. This is my vision of where we're going now. We're actually going back, there's a great book called 1491. We're going back to before Christopher Columbus. Experts don't know anything. They're just a fraud. And I love David Weinberger's new book, Too Big to Know, because he points out that in a room full of experts, the only expert is the room. Okay? And it's a very important insight. Eight communities, I've talked about this. There is no information initiative that is serious if it cannot bring together all of the information from all eight communities on that particular topic, as well as all related topics. We need to look at this one another time. But basically, most of the world is stuck in quadrant one. I don't like Twitter. I'll take questions. And nobody's really doing their homework, and nobody has a memory. I mean, it blows my mind. The New York Times sucks. It's just astonishing to me that we have reporters, even though I know that reporters are just a little news hole for a dying industry, we have reporters that actually don't know anything more than 5 years old. That's truly frightening. This is our world today. This is actually a citation analytic map of the sciences. And it shows how fragmented all these disciplines have become to the point that, you know, we have PhDs that know everything about nothing. And then you have this other thing here, integral consciousness, which is fun. Now, I like this. This is my favorite slide from the last 10 years. Most governments are down in this lower corner, spies in secrecy focused on interstate conflict. And now they've got this proliferation and terrorism and crime, and those are the boogeymen, so that you'll keep letting the government do seriously stupid bullshit. And then as you mature in your target and your sources and methods, you eventually get out to open source intelligence, multinational information sharing, a world brain in which all of us are nodes, and you're actually focused on what really matters. Poverty does more damage to the environment than all the corporations on the planet. Okay? So poverty, infectious disease, and environmental degradation, these are the serious ones. The U.S. government is not serious about what really matters. And I don't know what to do about it. I think we can get to panarchy. I think we can get to where every single one of us can create our own budget at each level. And all we have to do is identify ourselves by zip code and preferred party, and then all of that comes out in the wash. And then you have actual, genuine discussions, fact-based, evidence-based policy discussions. So the bottom line here, and I'm coming to my close, is organized people can indeed triumph over organized money. And I like to reassure, I don't think I have any wealthy friends actually, but I like to reassure the wealthy. There are 3,000 millionaires in the United States that are terrified that we're going to dismember their kids and violate their wives. And I don't think that's the case. There isn't enough money on the planet to warrant confiscation and redistribution. We have to dig ourselves out of this hole by creating infinite wealth, by empowering the 5 billion poor. And I just read Saylor's book, Mobile Whatever, and I gave it 4 stars. It wasn't written by him, and it's kind of a classic comic book version of important stuff. But if we can empower the 5 billion poor, we can create infinite wealth. We can change the rules of the game. We can change all of the marketplaces by revealing true costs. I mean, most of you probably know a gallon of gas that costs $4 actually has $12 in externalized costs to the current and future publics. And then truth and reconciliation, not justice. We need to go toward, there's a great book that Tom Attlee introduced me to called Non-Zero Win-Win, to open everything. And these are the references. I wrote this book in 2008. It's free online. I nailed it. But I can't get anybody to read the book. So I'm a failure. I have not been able to communicate what I think is obvious common sense truth. Now, this is my proposed answer. And that's it. I'll take questions.
Yes. Hi. So I probably should have just booed you earlier, but I was a little nervous to do so.
How about a big boo?
It's a...
Boo!
Let's boo you, because really, I don't want to make assumptions about your racial identity. I'm going to guess you identify as white.
Possibly.
Is you're Hispanic? I'm Hispanic, too, and frankly, I don't think I would have the right either, but, you know, to say that Barack Obama is not black is really just, I don't even
I've actually researched this.
Okay, that's great. Awesome conspiracy theory there.
No,
and
excuse me.
Also, the sexism about Jill Stein, lovely lady, but a deer in the headlights. Mm-hmm. I mean, you said so many things that I really agree with. But the crappy things that you said just stink the whole shit up. So just needed to stick around and say that.
Thank you very much. Barack Obama has been in search of his black identity ever since his Columbia days and being handled by Zbigniew Brzezinski.
What do you have to say about Barack Obama's
black identity? The one authentic moment in Barack Obama's presidential candidacy was when he said he could no more renounce Reverend Wright than he could renounce his own mother. That was authentic. After that, he sold out. He's still got $300 million that are not accounted for, a good portion of which come from sovereign defense, sovereign funds. And I'm not trashing Obama as an individual, but rather as a puppet. The bottom line here is he's done nothing that's seriously good for America. And neither has any of the other candidates, going back to Kennedy, who was assassinated for wanting to do good things for America. So I'll take questions, and also I will be here on Saturday night, and I realize that I say crappy things. And it's perhaps a flaw, perhaps a feature, but the subtitle of my last book before this one was Clarity, Diversity, Integrity, and Sustainability. If you can't have a conversation, if you can't get the facts on the table, if you are so hell-bent in your racial or gender or whatever other identity, then you're not much use to the conversation. And that's it. Sorry about that, as we used to say in Vietnam. Yes, sir.
Hi, Robert. I'm a big fan of the book by Gene Sharp, From Dictatorship to Democracy.
Mm.
And I just wonder if you could go back and talk a little bit about OWS and what's it going to take to get these people to move to a point where we have judicial invalidation, runaway grand juries, and some real meaningful change.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, I had so much hope for Occupy, and I was so excited by the possibilities. I think we're at a point. I did my first thesis on predicting revolution in 1976, and you can find my chart of revolutionary preconditions in the U.S. We're in very much in a state of pre-revolution in the United States of America. I mean, all we're missing is a soccer mom burning herself to death on the steps of Capitol Hill. Okay? That will do it. Any soccer moms in here? No. I mean, that will do it. Okay? We had a veteran burn himself to death on the steps of the court in New Hampshire, and it was hushed up. Okay? It did make the media in a tiny, tiny little way. But we're this close to some catalytic moment that all of a sudden the country says, well, whoa, wait a minute. Neither Obama nor Romney. Let's revisit this whole thing. And so I think at this point all I can do is put my thoughts and the thoughts of others that I have distilled and collated and put out there at bigbatusa.org and hope that, and I can't say a Ross Perot, I mean, Ross Perot had his own demons. And as a result, we lost a chance there. We have to get away from this whole electoral bullshit stuff, because it's all fraud. So I personally think that occupying the offices of the senators and the representatives and demanding an Electoral Reform Act of 2012 is the only thing that can lead to a nonviolent revolution. But I don't know if anyone agrees with me on that. Question, sir.
About 10 years ago, the Texas Libertarian Party gained full ballot access.
Good.
You know, and we run like 200 candidates election cycle, but our big problem right now is, like, locally we recruit candidates, and every time we get somebody that makes a mark, like ballot, you know, they take polling, and every time they poll like 30% or 20%, the big money, the big organized money comes in, and you got guys calling you like lawyers, and they straight offer you jobs to basically drop out of the race. And
right.
That's the problem is how can you, I mean, do you think of a way, how can you recruit people and let them know upstart this? At front, this is going to happen. They're going to find out how much money you owe, like your debts, your house, and they will just flat out offer you that money. How can you recruit people that, you know?
Before I went reform, I was libertarian. In fact, it was here at Hackers on Planet Earth in the 1990s that some nice young lady got me to take the libertarian test, and I realized I was a closet libertarian. And it had a good influence on me. You know, there's this all-or-nothing kind of thing going on here. And no one thing is going to fix it. Taking money out of politics won't fix it because the secretaries of state across this country are all corrupt. Getting Diebold put out of business will not quite fix it because then you've got all these issues of infrastructure and organization and so forth. So I honestly cannot tell you. I know the answer. All I do know is that what we're doing now is not working. And I really wanted Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich to come together and form a coalition cabinet and a balanced budget and demand electoral reform. Those are the only two guys in the United States of America who actually have the power to do that, and I consider them traitors because they refuse to do it. Okay, so please forgive me. I love Ron Paul. I want him to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But until he's willing to put his ass on the line and leave the Republican Party and lead all of us. Yes. Yeah, there you go. Ron Paul was bought out. You have it from Texas. There's a strong secessionist movement in Vermont, and I think Texas, Alaska, and basically, I think the states have to start seriously questioning whether the federal government is worth the price that we're all paying. And I'm not talking about small government or stop wars overseas or whatever. I'm talking about the fact that we have a system that has substituted ideology for intelligence and corruption for integrity. The U.S. government is broken. Good people trapped in a bad system. So I don't know what the answer is. I maybe it's an Arab Spring kind of thing. Maybe it is a soccer mom burning herself to death on the steps of Capitol Hill. This country needs a wake-up call. We've got 75,000 amputees across this country. Nobody knows that. We have over 500,000 disabled veterans from Gulf 1 and Gulf 2 because has everyone seen the Fallujah babies pictures? I mean, we've been using depleted uranium and stuff, and we're turning out little alien children in Iraq. It is truly astonishing to me that the world lets us get away with that stuff. So I love America the Beautiful, but right now we are not well represented. Yes, sir.
Yes, in other countries, voting is a requirement, punishable by fines. What's your opinion on that? And I'd like to follow it up with, in terms of the occupying the congressional offices, I think we all know that they're controlled by the moneyed interests. So shouldn't we go to the source of the problem and occupy, you know, other thing about the Occupy movement, I think it was a red herring because the money behind Occupy.
Yeah, the Koch brothers and others, Tea Party. Well, first off, I don't think anyone should be forced to do anything, including voting. There's a wonderful book by Will Durant. It's his 1916 doctoral thesis. And it's been published, republished recently as Philosophy and the Social Problem, the annotated edition. And any book I refer to, I've put the Cliff Notes on Amazon. Okay, so any book I refer to, you can go look up my review and get a summary of that book. What this boils down to is an educated public is the only way you can have a democracy. And in the 1920s, Rockefeller and Carnegie got together and agreed that they were going to create factory schools, and they were going to kill public transportation. And they did that. They bought up all the public transportation companies to put them out of business, and they pushed America toward this suburban sprawl stuff. And at the same time, they created schools that created factory workers. You know? So education is number one. And I'm excited. I mean, one good thing about Saylor's book, I like Michael Saylor's book, and I sum it up on Amazon. And I did this last night, actually. We're now getting to the point where people can not only get a free education online, they can also get credentialed. And we're moving in that direction very quickly. And my dream is educating the 5 billion poor one cell call at a time. So I think public education is the absolute beginning of this. Now, as far as occupying the Senate and House offices, I personally think that being a representative should be like jury duty, where it's random, because any one of you would be a better representative than anybody we have in Congress today, as long as you maintain your integrity and you knew you only had one term. So we've just created a system that perpetuates itself. And did you have a follow-up or anything? Sorry, I've lost the bubble. Yes, sir, next.
Hi. First off, I just want to say that I think the first commenter was correct. That was kind of out of line. But onto the substance, you seem to be making sort of a collection of two different points. One is you have specific sort of partisan or ideological things that you think need to be done. And another is that you're pointing out problems systemically with third-party access, with open access and things like that. I believe I have an answer to the latter part. I'm nonpartisan, so I don't want to comment on the former.
I thought I was.
That's actually the subject of my talk, so come to it, 8 p.m. and on. And I'm curious what you think of that. And you mentioned Vermont in particular, and there's a guy named Jeremy Hansen running for state senate. His platform is direct democracy, which is partially the subject of my talk, but his idea is basically his constituents will dictate to him what he votes. What do you think of that, and what do you think of the distinction that I'm making between your systemic sort of structural issues and the specific things that you think should be passed?
Well, I certainly don't think of myself as partisan. The whole point of a coalition cabinet and declaring a balanced budget in advance of election, oh, by the way, eliminating all taxes and replacing them with the automated payment transaction tax, which is a tiny tax.
I just want to point that specific policy is an ideological statement. It's not a nonpartisan statement.
All right, thank you. Let me move on. The automated payment transaction tax is a tiny tax on everything, and most importantly, it's a tiny tax on all stock and currency transactions. And it basically doubles the amount of money that's available while reducing the average family down to hundreds in terms of taxes actually paid. There is no lack of good common sense ideas in this country. What is lacking is the public conversation and the integrity and the public intelligence to actually demand that we be represented properly. So from my point of view, nonpartisanship means we have to get away from this two-party tyranny, because that's what it is. Teresa Amato wrote a wonderful book called Grand Illusion. And I recommend it highly. We have a two-party tyranny. I mean, Ronald Reagan made the joke, written by Peggy Noonan, the U.S. Congress has less turnover than the Soviet Politburo had, because they're buying in. Every one of them comes out a millionaire after one or two terms. So I'm not partisan, and I don't think these ideas are partisan. As far as the systemic stuff goes, we're pretty close, I think, to where handheld devices will allow for true cost information to get out there. And I believe we're getting closer to where at least the 1 billion rich will be able to start voting with their pocketbooks and boycotting, Jim Turner's term. I mean, I love this Wired article which said you can point your cell phone at something and it says, if you eat me, I'll kill you. That's good. I mean, we're getting there. We're getting to the point where, especially with IPv6, we're getting to the point where all things can tell us their provenance, their entire supply chain, how much child labor, how much water. Jay-Z Liskowitz did a thing on T-shirts, okay? An average T-shirt has like 500 gallons of water in it, and it has child labor in it. It has tax avoidance in it, and it has all kinds of different toxins all along the way. And that kind of knowledge is not at your fingertips. And the key point that Saylor was making in his book is that the handheld app machine, rather than the cell phone, is something that can now bring this kind of knowledge to your fingertips. And so we need an app, basically, that allows any barcode to give you the true cost of any product. And it's going to take 5 or 6 years, but we're getting there. As far as Vermont goes, I believe Vermont is the best hope of the nation, in the sense that we have to have bottom-up resilience. And we have to have counties and states that say no to mega agriculture, that begin this urban farming, that begin to say no to absentee landlords. I mean, I love eminent domain. If we're a community and there's an absentee landlord, goodbye, asshole. I mean, in France, they give out 100-year leases, okay? Basically, the land is still owned by the community, but you have a 100-year lease. So I think we don't lack for good ideas. We lack for that burning soccer mom to actually get us all to the point where we're willing to say, hey, now wait a minute, we're over the cliff and falling. Yes, sir.
Yeah, just a couple of points of interest and then a question. The first thing is that I agree with your assessment. I really wish Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich would get serious about things, but both of them are going to be out of a job come November, or rather December of this year, since neither one is running for re-election. Dennis Kucinich can't because he got fucked by his own party. That happened right in Toledo, where I'm from. Second point of interest is I think when you talk about, well, what's the answer, what's the solution, I feel like it's kind of cliche, but maybe it's somewhat applicable here, that, you know, think globally, act locally. I think there's a huge lack of local organizing, which is, we had these big ideas. There's so many systemic problems that are really national and international in scope. We get so wrapped in them from an sort of academic or ideological perspective.
We're being distracted.
We are. And it distracts exactly from getting around to our neighbors and our friends, where the strongest bonds can be made. And from those, actual resistance from the grassroots up can happen. So I feel like oftentimes maybe we all need to take a step back and realize, where the fuck do we live? Who the fuck can we talk to? And what can we do? Because we are a very isolated culture, and that's, I think, at the root of a lot of our problems.
It is. And Paul Goodman wrote a wonderful book in the 1960s called Communitas, and I continue to recommend it. You can build a 40-foot biosphere which has tilapia fish with plants on top, and it'll feed a family of five for a year. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and the biggest mistake I made was moving out on my wife and spending too much money on a townhouse that finally became a short sale. What I should have done was taken her house off the grid and created my own little office apartment out there. But we should be taking, I mean, in New Hampshire, all houses that are built today have generators built in automatically. I mean, if I were a county supervisor, I would be taking my county off the grid. And all these wild-ass ideas about wind farms and all of that stuff, centralized energy does not work. You lose 50% in the downstream process. It's about solar and wind and automobiles. 92% of automobiles, their energy is, like, wasted. So I agree with you, and if my wife did not have a government job, my dream would be to buy a 51-foot Beneteau Oceanus and basically get off the grid. Internet, water maker, air conditioning, the whole bit. So we're all captive. But I absolutely agree with you that it – and Voltaire said this, actually. He said, sometimes all I can handle is my garden. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you say, and I'm particularly impressed. We're done? Okay. One more question or stop here? One more? Okay.
You're particularly impressed by...
Oh, Rosemary somebody. Tom Attlee. If you look up Tom Attlee in Urban Gardening, Tom has been my guru for connecting with real people. He wrote The Tao of Democracy and Evolutionary Activism, and he's got a new book coming out on the wisdom of the people. But urban gardening is coming back. And one of the things we're going to find out is a lot of these skyscrapers are going to be hulks. You're going to have to really reinvent the whole skyscraper concept. So I absolutely agree. Local is good. Let me get one more question and then we'll stop.
Sure.
Because
thanks.
That gentleman's been standing.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I have a million things in through my head. You're talking about agriculture. I'm a practitioner of the agricultural arts. You're talking about Ron Paul. You're talking about all different kinds of things. But first of all, like you say, it has absolutely no consequence whether Barack Obama's white, black, green, yellow, purple, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're all bought and paid for, left, right,
I can agree
Democrat.
With that.
They're all bought and paid for by the same international banking corporate interests. It doesn't matter. What I was going to ask you about is, are you aware of anything regarding the 14th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment, the War of 1812, the Reconstruction Acts after the Civil War? Are you citizenship? Are you aware of any of these different things?
The primary point that I'm aware of is that the Civil War was actually a war of secession. It was an illegal war. Lincoln had no right.
Yeah, illegal and unlawful is your things, but continue.
Well, okay, we could. I'll be here on Saturday at midnight. But bottom line
here
is,
I'll be here.
All these wars have been about money, and bankers have funded both sides. But go on. What do you want to do in the way of a statement or a question?
Well, this is a fellow by the name of John Ainsworth. He's trying to take the constitutionality of the Reconstruction Acts to the Supreme Court, because what the Reconstruction Acts did was, after the Civil War, it jammed through the 14th Amendment, because the Civil War was mostly about states' rights, because the North wanted to implement the 14th Amendment, which nationalized citizenship, did away with state sovereignty, made one nation as opposed to 58 nations in federation. That's why
right.
federal government.
Which is what I've always thought it should be.
Yeah, but it instituted a corporate government. There's the organic government that is under the Constitution for the United States, while the corporate United States is the Constitution of the United States. We're all corporate national citizens. We're not citizens of our respective states. Like I'm not American. I'm a Rhode Islander. And then you come into Federation to maintain Article 1, Section 8, to maintain a Navy, to,
we have to cut off
repel invasions and insurrections and such.
Do you have a quick comment, one more minute, before the next speaker comes up?
I'd say look at John Ainsworth and all these different kinds of things. There's a million different things. What you said, buy local, that's a big thing I'm all about.
Well, let's do Saturday.
Yeah, that sounds good. I got a million things raised.
All right, Saturday, you're the first question.
Sounds good.
Okay,
sounds good.
Thank you all.
Okay.